You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Outdoor Access Commission, heading at Anuku, published Aotearoa's first report on the state of national public land access last week. The report revealed how up to a third of Māori land is considered landlocked, citing this as one of the biggest challenges to public access in 2025. I first spoke to Strategic Relationships Manager of He Ringa Anuku, Doug McCready, about the research journey and the address of increasing accessibility to landlocked areas for landowners. Kia ora, Doug. What was this research journey like for the organisation? Could you talk us through the process?
Yeah, so the Outdoor Access Commission, He Ringa Anuku, has been around for a fair amount of time, since the 90s, and we have a number of field people that deal with public access opportunities and challenges. And so within the organisation, we also have a GIS team, specialist advisors. And so within the organisation, there's just a wealth of knowledge and history relative to the kaupapa. We're a very small organisation, so we felt that one thing that we could do was basically summarise and capture the knowledge we have in a form that was palatable for the public in terms of giving a general picture of what public access looks like in New Zealand. So it was largely an internal process, but with our individual experts and all drawing on years and years of experience and external context.
How do the results about Māori landlocked whenua compare to your organisation's expectations when you were pulling all of this knowledge together?
Yes, so really, really interesting space. So firstly, the definition of landlocked, it can be looked at in many different ways. So we have a block of land that's located way out, you know, in the hills and the forest, and there is no road, no actual physical road. There, we would call that, you know, access is limited. But it's kind of degrees of landlocked. So it may be landlocked from a driving and an easy access point of view, but for an experienced tramper navigator, it may technically not be landlocked. So just from the outset, I just want to clarify that when we talk about landlocked, we're actually talking about a different range of ways of interpreting that word. And then you bring into the equation paper roads, which unformed legal roads is the correct term, and they provide legal access, but sometimes or often they're not practical to traverse because of the quality, the steepness, and many other reasons that a unformed legal road may not actually be usable. So our findings, I believe, were as expected. We well know, and it is publicly available information around ahu whenua land blocks that are managed under the, or that come under the jurisdiction of the Ture Whenua Act under the Māori Land Court. And anyone can just look at a map and see that many of these blocks are located in remote places with no or limited access. So I'd say that the findings generally were as expected. The interesting element is that, you know, we have seen at times a perception that Māori land blocks access to public land, but I think it would be fair to say that from a logical analysis based on mapping and observation, it's actually typically the other way around.
And what prevents land ownership and different pathways to accessibility to this land from being addressed in closer synchronicity with one another?
So there are approximately 8,000 ahu whenua land blocks in Aotearoa, New Zealand. There is also what we refer to as te tiriti settlement land. So that's land that's returned to tangata whenua via the treaty settlement process. And then we also acknowledge and understand what we refer to as mana whenua whānui, where there is hapu mana whenua over all land, which doesn't align with a legal ownership concept, but it's really tying back into how the hapū are dispersed and relate to one another across, you know, fluid boundaries, stories, history, etc. So a more holistic way of looking at land occupation. So whenever we think about land, we think about tangata whenua Māori land, we actually think about it from three or maybe even four different perspectives to start with. It's important that obviously the legal delineations are primary lens, but also the holistic lenses and the way that people, the way that things have eventuated in reality is also very important, because often you can make better gains in terms of progressing and moving forward for everybody if you are working from a perspective that meaningfully takes into account the actual reality of any particular land or blocks of land and how they're used. So we know that in relation to landlocked tangata whenua land, a lot of that or most of that came about during the era of land confiscations, land sales, and the early dealings of the New Zealand Company and the Crown acquiring land. And often, or almost always, Māori were left with the difficult to access remnants, whereby the primary objective in those times, as I understand it, was to acquire land that was suitable for farming. And so the consequences is that we have these many, many blocks that are steep, they're rugged, they're often covered in bush, and they're very difficult to access physically. Then we also have another feature of New Zealand history, which is unformed legal roads, whereby many, many roads were drawn on paper for various reasons, but were never actually built. And so you put the two together, and you find that for a percentage of the time, accessing the landlocked Māori blocks can be improved or through the understanding where the unformed legal roads are and learning, experimenting and basically finding out whether or not you can traverse them and developing that. The second method is to work with neighbours of those blocks and build relationships and access the lands via the neighbouring blocks, and that can lend itself towards establishing access easements through other properties by agreement. So there are ways to progress the situation, but of course to even begin we need to know where those blocks are, we need to know who the neighbours are, we need to have a level of resourcing to be able to travel there, and a level of knowledge to be able to utilise the services of agencies and the various GIS tools, etc., to begin that journey. And so if we extrapolate that thinking a bit further, there's a massive opportunity to liberate those land blocks and to have them potentially used productively, and when I say productively, obviously in a sense of ecotourism or other uses of, you know, conservation and sustainable use of the native forest resource that most of them have on them. There's opportunities to work with DOC in terms of predator and pest control. And in many, many cases, the landlocked Māori blocks are already being used by the public because there's a lack of an established governance group and any form of presence of the tangata whenua owners. They often just default to being used by those resourced explorers who are able to get out there, or in some cases neighbouring farms will, you know, graze them or have some sort of overlap in terms of their farming practice that spills over into the Māori block. So there's a really, while it's not an ideal situation at the moment, there is a huge amount of potential to move it forward and to develop. And the public access element is very tightly aligned both in that development process and in terms of the future potentials of what the blocks could potentially be used for. There are also examples of Ahuwhenua blocks in this very situation who have already gone down this path and created hunting cabins and tracks and trails, established governance structures and you know, pest control and all those types of things. And so it's working hand in hand with the objectives of the you know, wider conservation estates that often border them, as well as reaching and achieving the aspirations of the Tangata Whenua group.
I then spoke to Professor Margaret Mutu, who spoke on the report from the wider historical colonial context of the ability of Tangata Whenua to access their land. Margaret particularly highlighted the discrepancies between Pākehā landowners and Māori in their legal and physical abilities to access and utilise land under their ownership with ease. Kia ora, Margaret. How do you feel about this report on the state of land access in Aotearoa?
Access to land throughout the country has always been a big thing for Pākehā ever since they arrived here back in the early 1800s. And it's one of the key bugbears of the treaty claim settlement process that if you want land back from the government and you're not prepared to pay full market price for it, you have to provide full public access to the land. And that's something that's bugged Māori for a long time, is that we are required by law to provide public access to our own lands that were stolen off us, that are returned under the treaty settlements process. But what this report highlights is a problem that has bedeviled Māori ever since the Māori Land Court was set up, and that is that Māori land, there are thousands and thousands of hectares of Māori land that are landlocked, and that there is no legal, Pākehā legal access to this Māori land. The area where this is most, that I've certainly heard the most about, is around the Taihape area, where there is more than 50,000 hectares of Māori land there that the owners have not been able to legally get access to for nearly a century. So this is an old problem for Māori, and I don't know whether I'm pleased or whether that a government department has finally made it public that for many Māori, even accessing the tiny 4% of the land in this country that we still have, we can't even get access to it. I don't know whether I'm pleased to see that in the government report or just looking at them and going, whatever, we've been fighting this for over a century, and now you're finally going to tell the public that this is what you've done to us. I have to say that when that report came out of the Waitangi Tribunal in 2024, I know what we would do up home if we were told we couldn't legally access our land. We'd say, to hell with you lot, this is our land, and you're not going to tell us whether we can or cannot access our own land. And we would just go there. And I did ask the people, the iwi and hapu from Taihape, why do you even listen? The whole Māori Land Court, parliamentary government justice system in this country is illegitimate. We know that. Why do you even listen to them? And their answer was quite simple, was that was exactly the approach that their kaumātua took, that they were not going to be dictated to by effectively colonising invaders. And they were going to access their land still. Well, they got arrested and thrown into jail. So that's the reality, is that this report has maybe brought to the public's attention that there is a very large amount of Māori land that we are not legally allowed to access, and it creates a huge problem for those Māori landowners.
How do you see this report published last week by He Renga Anuku influencing political movements around whenua?
Well, I would hope that it would give Māori landowners, whānau, hapū, who are directly affected by this, the strength and the confidence to say, this is not right, it's never been right, and we're not going to be restricted by these crazy laws that you put in place that tell us that we are supposed to negotiate with the new owner of the land, pay that new owner to get access, and pay for all the government process that we have to go to get that recognised. And I would hope that our people would say, to hell with that. You stole the land illegally. You should never have done it. And then to tell us we can't have the rest of our land. We know what happens with quite a few of this land. If it's at all usable, the Pākehā person who purchased the adjoining land then gets to use our land that we're not allowed to access for free. And then for him to then say, oh, well, I now claim this land as mine. That has happened throughout the country. And I would hope that our people would have the confidence now to say, this is not on, never ever was on, and we're not going to tolerate it anymore. We will get access to our land and let the government sort out the problem that it created in the first place by stopping us from our land. Let it sort out its Pākehā landowners.
So what is most important from here following this new release of information, which, you know, is something that's already known and has been evidenced in last week's report?
So the most important thing is that you've brought to the public's attention that there is a massive injustice here that discriminates against Māori landowners and says that while public access to Pākehā landowners is always guaranteed, that is not the case for Māori. That is totally unjust. It is illegal in terms of the way other non-Māori landowners are treated, and that this is something that must be addressed by the Pākehā Parliament, because Māori are going to address it under our own laws, our own tikanga, and if you're not ready for that, then you have got to get ready now and accept the fact that you cannot keep doing this to Māori and get away with it.
That was Doug McCready, the Strategic Relationships Manager from He Rangaonuku, the Outdoor Access Commission, followed by Professor Margaret Mutu, both commenting on the background and significance of Aotearoa's first report on the state of public land access published by He Rangaonuku last week that revealed up to a third of Māori land is considered landlocked.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.